How are you?
Very well.
I was going to play this really cool and only tell you this at the end, but I've wanted to interview you for 13 years.
You what? You
wanted to interview you for 13 years.
Gosh.
I was going to wait till the end to tell you so I didn't come across as desperate, but I decided against it.
Okay, well.
So this is very exciting. So that was great, and I want to talk to you. I know we've only got 15 minutes and we need to get your photograph. So I do want to talk to you, obviously, about the officer side of things and the stuff that you were talking about, you know, social hubs and lifestyle and changing office. And then I also want to talk to you a little bit about some sort of more global stuff as well and some more general stuff. Does that sound okay?
Sure, sounds fine.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So I follow you on Instagram and I've been seeing that you've been busy preparing your speech for quite a while now.
Yes, that's right. Yes, with the encouragement of my young son. Who's introduced me to the world of Instagram.
How are you finding Instagram?
Great. I love it, yes.
Yeah. Nice skiing photos. Now I come across like a real stalker. So let's start off with the officer side of things. Obviously, this is the BCO conference. The way the officers work is changing a lot. Do you think that the entire industry, from design all the way through to the end, knows what the occupier wants? Do you think that is understood?
I think the workplace as a concept is such a wide spectrum in terms of different professions, skills, but with more opportunity, more demand, and with standards being raised in terms of levels of expectation, then I think that the trend that you will be seeing, and is already apparent, is that to attract the best people, you have to provide good facilities. Mm. You have to offer something which will... Instead of kind of one party being desperate for a job and will take a job at kind of any price and any circumstances, I think in more and more sectors you're seeing socially talented groups, younger groups, who will pick or choose where they work based not just on how much they're being paid, but the quality of the environment, the lifestyle that one company will offer rather than another.
Yeah.
And also with younger generations more informed on issues of climate change and the way that that will and is affecting the health of their families, themselves, future generations, will be much more demanding, much more questioning of what a potential employer will be doing in terms of combating climate change. So I think that what you're seeing is a transfer where creating good quality working environments which are more responsible in terms of sustainability is good for business.
Mm-hmm.
And is good for all the things that are important to industry.
I think you said once, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you said that as an architect, you have no power at all as an architect on certain.
What I meant by that is that is that in an ideal world, an architect would be able to create a building, would say, I have a passion about this aspect of design. I'm just going to take this site here, and I'm going to create a building. I'm going to create that building for 5,000 people, and I'm going to demonstrate what I believe in.
Mm.
If you're a developer as well as an architect, you could do that. If you owned a Bloomberg enterprise, or you made phones, and you're also an architect, you could do it. But as an architect, the point I'm making is that I can't tell you what to do. I can't direct somebody and say, make that building.
What do you think the world would look like if, as an architect, you could tell people what to do?
I'd like to think it would be a better place. Because I believe passionately that design, enlightened design, can make a difference for good. I also believe that by taking down the barriers between professions, by encouraging multidisciplinary working, and what I should have said, and what unfortunately I didn't say in my talk, was that the work that I was showing, if it had a difference, and that difference was positive, then that was in large part because I'd been successful in terms of bringing together different skills to interact and to interact creatively together. And that's the mission of my foundation, which is encouraging interdisciplinary thinking, which is breaking down the silos, the barriers between different professions. I mean, there is still, amongst the profession of designers, there is still in some quarters a deep distrust of those who actually make it possible to realize a building. And they're often kept in a queue until the end of the process. Bringing them forward to the beginning of the process, making them active participants in the process on a round table approach is not designed by committee, but it is bringing all those skills together at the outset. So whether it's reinventing the airport, and making it a more human entity.
You say that people's pulse rates go up when they're travelling.
Yes, yes. So we try to calm them down.
Yeah. Well, I've been to many of your airports, and I'm sure that you've achieved that. so you talked a bit about there about not being able to tell people what to do, and not necessarily always having the power, but despite not having the power, do you feel the responsibility as not just a designer, but...
No, I feel a responsibility to use powers of communication. And if I feel that there are important messages to get out there, then I feel a responsibility to do it in different ways. To do it through my work as a designer, through leading designers, creating teams, to do it by giving talks. I can't give all the talks that I'm asked to give, so I have to be fairly selective.
How do you choose?
Well, Ken is the reason I'm here. Allegiances, loyalty. Students, through the foundation, through incentives like the Solar Prize. So trying to, get the message across to younger generations through the foundation, obviously.
Yeah.
And in a way, being, a juggler, trying to balance all these things out.
You said once as well that the reality is that society is embedded in mobility, which I think, do you remember? I mean, that's a lovely quote. I just wondered what else you feel society is embedded in that we need to be aware of, other than mobility. Technology is so huge, and that's been something that you, Foster and Partners has always been very forward thinking
sure.
on.
Sure. The family motto. When I was made a baron, I was told that I had the opportunity to have a coat of arms, and if I had a coat of arms, it had to have a motto. So the family motto is the only constant is change. So I think that that probably sums up the story of everything. The one thing that you can be sure of
is change.
I mean, it's
And how do we embrace that when so many people are scared of it? Change is the only constant. I completely agree with that.
It's interesting. How can I... two examples. I went to Nîmes recently, where we have this small building opposite the Maison Carrée, which is the beautifully preserved Roman temple in the middle of this small town in the south of France. And to create that building involved the removal of a 19th century portico to what was a theatre, which was burnt down in the past. And And demonstrations were took place. And one form of demonstration was that a club was formed. And once a week, the kind of great and good of the city, the intellectuals, would gather in the portico and they would have lunch there. And as a protest against the women. And on a recent visit, somebody came up to me and said, "You don't know me, but I was part of the group that was protesting against your building.
Really?
And I just want to tell you, we were wrong." And the other, of course, is that people's memories are quite short. I mean, I gave a talk at my daughter's school, Cheltenham Ladies College, a few weeks ago, and I was agonising what to show, and I thought, should I show Trafalgar Square? No, everybody will know it. And then I realised that the audience would have been in a pram at the time that we did Trafalgar Square. So I showed it. And again, it's a similar story. I don't think any of the people who opposed that at the time, now seeing it, would want to bring it back to what it was. So I think one's memories are short. It's not always the case that when you make a change, because it's a change, it's not seen as a change for good. But so many of the changes which do take place are changes for good. Of course, there's always the other side of the coin. One can think of buildings which have been demolished in the past and buildings re-erected which wind the clock back. So, but I think that significantly there is a natural resistance to change, but the story of society from coming out of the cave is about change and it is about progress.
Absolutely, and speaking of that, you know, obviously being one of the sort of best-known, very global architects, at the moment, the world is a bit of a funny place, and currently, geopolitically, it's quite difficult. You know, as someone who has not only travelled extensively, but has left a mark all around the world, how do you think that good architecture, good design...
I think really having the benefit of hindsight over a longer period, I think you realise that there are cyclical trends, that there are periods of kind of boom and bust. And if that's true financially, it will probably be true into the future. So you have these ripples, and I think some of the ripples that we're seeing at the moment are political ripples. I think in the grander scheme of things, if you look back in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, it won't seem the big deal that it seems at the moment.
That's quite reassuring to hear somebody say
it's
that.
It's a personal view. But...
And we talked sort of very briefly about technology, but what do you think the future of technology might mean coming up for construction and for design? And what are your thoughts on 3D printed buildings and you know that kind of thing? Is that the future, or is that moving away from what architecture really is meant to be?
No, I think that it offers... properly harness the downside potential of more mindless repetition of intrinsically bad practice and designs, but I would take a much more optimistic view. I'd say that it offers the potential for greater customization, greater creativity, of course it raises very big social issues. If you are able to, through robots and artificial intelligence, to be able to do things more cleanly and quickly that otherwise were very labour intensive, then that's liberating in one sense, but it also raises the question of the future of that labour force. But historically, I think that the trends have been that has resulted in higher levels of education and a redeployment of labour in more productive quarters.
Mm. We've got about 6 minutes left and we need to take your photograph. So I've got three questions, one relatively long one and two very short ones. So the first question is, I'm just really interested, you know, you've been working in this industry for a long time. What have you noticed in terms of the rest of the industry working around you? Namely developers, really, in terms of their ability to embrace architectural progress, architectural design. Do you think they're on board?
I think they're following the market. In some instances, they are leading the way, but generally, the overall trend is that it is very much the entrepreneurs, the enlightened individuals. I mean, the three buildings that I mentioned, which are nearing completion, Apple, which was initiated by Steve Jobs, carried on by Johnny Ive and his team with the support of Tim Cook, so there's a continuity there. Mike Bloomberg, I mean, extraordinary individual. I don't know whether you've seen his most recent book, but very, very much a building which is sustainable and progressive.
His connectivity driving force is very impressive as well.
Yes, and his recent book. And Brian Roberts in Comcast. All of these are buildings which are coming out of very different individuals and organizations, but I have no doubt whatsoever that in the same way that there was a trickle-down effect from Willis Faber, which was a private initiative, and then many of those ideas have found their way into mainstream developers' buildings, that you'll see the same. I mean, I think it's a continuous thing. But there again, it's the story that I perhaps started with, and that is that we're all the product of influences, and some of those are manifest and obvious, others are more subtle and perhaps subconscious.
Okay, and finally then I'm going to hand you over to Will. I'm going to pick one of my final two questions. I'm sure you've been asked this before, it's very unoriginal, but if you were going to be remembered for one mark that you've left across the world, which one would you pick?
It's, you know, my cliche answer to the
cliche question
is it's a bit like, you know, how do you choose a child? It's different ones for different reasons. I think that the Sainsbury Centre would be, because it was the first public building, it was about art, and it was about two individuals who started off as clients, but ended up more like kind of grandparents. If it's the Reichstag, it's a building which perhaps ticks more boxes. It's a green manifesto about energy, it's carbon neutral, it's about the public, it's about democracy, it's about integrating art, it's recycling an old building, it's a building which is symbolic of a nation as well as a city. So I suspect that probably I'd end up somewhere round about there.
Thank you so much. I'd love to talk to you for longer, but I don't have longer, and we'll need to see your photographs.
Okay.
So thank you very much. It's lovely to see you.
And you.
Thank you.